Hey there, welcome to the 15th episode of the CrackerCast podcast. This is David from MrCracker.com, and it is April 21st, a Wednesday of 2010. So I just woke up and decided to record a episode of the CrackerCast podcast. I had one of the weirdest mornings I've ever encountered. I literally don't know what the hell happened when I was sleeping. I actually woke up and my bed had moved a foot away from the wall. I found a broken glass of spilled water on the floor. There was a glass of spilled tea on my desk. My keyboard's covered. My computer screen was flipped over on the desk, and my other one was on the floor. And then my foot was bleeding, so was my thumb. It's really weird. I do not know what the hell happened. Maybe it was the infamous 420 last night. But then again, I don't really participate in those kind of deeds, but still, weird. Anyways, let's get into the news. First up, we have Chinese hackers stole Dalai Lama's email and government secrets. So according to this research team of cyber security analysts, for the past year, this group in China, Chengdu, China, has been stealing a year's worth of information from the Dalai Lama's personal emails, as well as in confidential encrypted documents from the Indian government. Yep. Why is it that all of these tags seem to originate from China? Weird. Alright, next up we have Bank of America employee charged with planting malware on ATMs. So one of the employees of Bank of America, one of the IT staff, was found that he installed malware on the ATM machines. And it allowed him to, you know, withdraw money, steal pins. The actual source code for that malware was spotted last year on some 20 ATMs in Russia and Ukraine. It was designed to primarily capture pins and bank cards, pin card data. But it also allows the thieves to instruct the machine to eject whatever cash was still in it. So pretty good working malware. Alright, next up we have malware extorts cash from BitTorrent users. This story was kind of neat, kind of a smart approach to malware, and I'm pretty positive that a lot of people fell for this. But basically what would happen is this malware, it would install on people's computers who use BitTorrent. And obviously if you're using BitTorrent, 90% of the time it's for downloading copyrighted material like movies, games, right? Well, what this malware did was it would check to see what torrents you last downloaded, and then it would pop up this little pop-up with basically it would show you the files detected that you downloaded. It would give you like a whole lawsuit preview file, basically that they're going to sue you. It was just this whole kind of, we're going to sue you, this is the copyright company, we've detected that you've been downloading these illegal downloads, blah, 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 and if you wish, you could settle this pre-trial, and then they'd give you a charge, one for legal license purchase for like a couple of bucks, then copyright holder fine for $249, then copyright protection organization fee for the use of software tracking illegal file downloads for $126, then a traffic fee for $2. And some taxes, and altogether, they were trying to get $400 out of people that were caught, downloading illegal things. And if you chose to ignore it, they would scare you with one of these 5 years in prison and a minimum of $250,000 fine, blah blah blah, and it'll be passed to court if you don't pay now. So I'm sure that a lot of people fell for this. I actually have heard of a legitimate company. I believe this was a while back. But what they would do is they would do the same exact thing. These were copyright companies, companies that actually had a lot of copyright material that people wanted, like movies and such. And then they would track these BitTorrent, torrent files. And because, when you're downloading a torrent, your IP address is pretty much open, you know. So they can get your information. And then they would go to the ISP, they'd get your information, and then they send you a letter in the mail and be like, this is what you were downloading, this was legal, if you wish you can pay for the copyright material, and this include fine, blah blah blah, and a couple hundred bucks, and people would pay up because otherwise they'd go to court. Now, I don't know how many times they actually took it to court, but they made a lot of money. In fact, they made more money off these copyright violators than they would have if these people actually purchased the material from the stores altogether. So I guess this fake company took advantage of people and made them scared and made him pay $400, because if you think about it, $400 is a little bit better than 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. They could have been easily protected from this scam if they just did some research online. But a lot of people don't think about that kind of stuff. So that was kind of neat. Next up, we have Apache Project Server hacked, passwords compromised. 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 So yeah, the Apache Software Foundation server was hacked. And, if you think about it, this can be pretty dangerous because there are millions of machines on the internet that use the Apache server. So if they, updated the code and added some malicious, backdoor rootkits, whatever, then an update on the website. There would be a lot of people would actually download it and update their servers, and they'd have a whole wide, basically a giant buffet of compromised servers. But it didn't happen, so still. Next up, we have TD hacker and no 2D hacker in TJX case sentenced to 5 years. So the whole TJX credit card hacker who hacked that guy who Gonzalez who hacked millions of credit cards, he was sentenced like 20 years in prison. Anyways, they're still, trying to take down all his accomplices, and they finally took down another guy for 5 years by the name of Damon Patrick Toey. And he's been sentenced to 5 years in prison and a $100,000 fine for helping out this Miami hacker, Albert Gonzalez, to steal tens of millions of credit cards. And next up, we have 9-year-old accused of hacking school computers. So this 9-year-old kid, I guess he got a passerby by, looking. I don't know how it was. I think it was just by looking over when the teacher had typed it in, or maybe wrote it down. Who knows? But he got his password to the system. He logged in and he changed a bunch of stuff. He didn't really do any damage. I don't even think he meant to. Maybe he did have intent to do damage, but he's only 9 years old, so they kind of dropped the charges against him. But he's being accused of being a hacker. That's kind of funny. But that's it for this week's news. If you want to hear a lot more news, read up on all the weekly news, then you can go to my blog, MrCracker.com. Look on the right-hand side, there is an opt-in box. Put in your name and email address. Click submit, and you will be subscribed as soon as you can confirm your email address via the link that will be sent to your email. And then you'll receive an email a week about all the weekly news for security and hacking topics. That is it for this week. This is news. Let's get into the main topic. So for the main topic, I'll be introducing you to the big world of social engineering. Now, when most people think about hacking, they assume it has to do with computers, only computers, all this technical stuff, coding, all that hard-sounding, difficult technical stuff, right? Well, there's a whole other world to it, and it's called social engineering. And here's a quick explanation on definition from the Hacker's Kit that used to be on sale on the Hackers Network website. I don't believe it is anymore, but I just pulled it up. I've had it for a couple years. But this is the definition it gives. Social engineering is a term that describes a non-technical kind of intrusion that relies heavily on human interaction and often involves tricking other people to break normal security procedures. So, like it says, it involves human interaction. So basically, a more psychological kind of thing that relies just on human interaction. So instead of going out there on a computer and trying to hack someone's website, you can try to do the same things via talking to someone and making them think you're someone else, and making them trust you, making them like you, so they give up confidential information to you, like usernames and passwords. That's pretty much the gist of what social engineering is. Now, social engineering is pretty much just like a con act. You're conning someone into giving you some certain information that you're looking for, right? And you can do this by making them trust you, making them believe you're someone else. Making them like you and then asking for something. People like to do things for people they like, you know what I mean? And in this kit, they give a couple examples. I'll read them to you since I'm kind of a little bit too lazy to make my own right now. But here's a couple examples. Hello, I am Bill's security manager, and I need your ID and username to upgrade your profile, or your tax information will come out wrong. So this could be kind of a corporation setting, some kind of company setting where some random person approaches you and he's like, "Hey, I'm the dude from security. You gotta give me your information so I can update your tax info." Blah blah blah. Like, you don't want to mess with your tax info, right? And you trust him because, you're in your workplace, and this guy, he's got to be trustworthy, right? Who else would ask you for that kind of information? And people, being the trusting people they are, people don't usually believe that other people want to do them harm. They automatically assume good most of the time, unless, there's reason not to, and they kind of give it up. But most of the time, this type of these type of questions and kind of human interaction is over the phone, where if someone's like, "Listen, I'm this guy, I'm from IT department," you don't want to mess with them, right? They let them do their job, give them the information they need, and move on. And they do, they believe them. If you were sitting in work, let's say you have an office job, you're sitting in work and you get a telephone call, and it's the guy's like, "Hey, I'm Bill," and now you know for sure that the guy who works in IT's name is Bill, and you get a phone call and it's like, "Hey, this is Bill. I need your we're having some problems with the internet, with the database. I can't pull up your information. Could you speed it up for me by giving it to me so my boss, doesn't yell at me, or my boss is breathing down my neck, and I really need your ID so I can finish this off," blah blah blah. Like, you would give it to them, right? And that's called social engineering. Here's another example. Your account has sent out fraud emails. We are investigating possible comp ugh. We are investigating of possible comp okay, this is broken English. I'll just go to the next one. I'll just make up my own. Let's see. Hey Ben, whatever your name is. We're experiencing no, let's see. Your account has been sending out fraud emails, and we're investigating a possible compromise of your account. We will need your ID and password so that we can clear it all up and prove that it has nothing to do with you. So now, in this case, they're kind of making you fear, kind of hitting your fear emotion, because you don't want to be caught sending out, fraud emails at work, or you don't want your to be thought that you don't want people to think that you're sending out fraud because you could lose your job, right? Well, now they're. It's basically it's all a giant psychological act, So other things, people can make small talk with you, like, "Oh, hey," just chat with you a little bit at the water cooler, and get you to like them, say some funny stories or stuff, and then ask you for a favor, and you'd probably give it to them. But social engineering doesn't just have to be just asking for it. You can actually do other types of tactics, like bribing. Here's an example. "I'll pay you $1,000 if you can get me a fake ID to enter the building. My old friend is working here, and I think he's cheating with my wife." So now the dude's gonna pay you, and he has a legitimate reason, because you know what? This dude's cheating on his wife. So you gotta help him out, because that's not cool. So as you can see, these are types of social engineering attacks. Now, it doesn't have to be a person-to-person kind of interaction. It could also be via email. And I was actually just working on this. There's some phishing course about phishing for people's accounts, email accounts, and other types of social networking, passwords and stuff. And I was talking about the social engineering aspect of phishing. And basically, what phishing is I just explained in a previous episode. Phishing is basically tricking someone into thinking that that current page is actually that website's main page, and when they enter the details on it, which looks exactly like the main page of that website, like, let's say, some baking webpage. But when they put in the information, it sends you the login information, and it redirects them to the main page. So basically, you trick them into putting their information into a fake login page that looks exactly like the real one. Anyways, a way I was explaining to get people to fall for that is to send an email to that person, pretending to be that company. So let's say I'm Facebook, and I'm like, pretending to be Facebook, I'll send someone an email saying, "Hey, this is the Facebook IT department. We're currently we're currently updating people's accounts, blah blah blah. Please log in and update your information, or your account will be locked." So, something of that sort. And then you provide a link. And when they click on that link, they go to the main Facebook page, which looks exactly like Facebook, but in reality, it's not really the real Facebook page. So you're conning them into believing that they need to go and log in into Facebook and change their information, right? And you send them to the link that looks exactly like Facebook. So that's a social engineering attack via email. So there's actually, I'm going to link to a PDF on the show notes about a real life story about, by Gregory Peck. It's a real story about a company that hired this security analyst to take over their company's security kind of aspect of the company. And on his first day, he managed to get in the company without any card. What he did was he basically cut up to some people that were walking towards the company and the building, and he basically befriended them. And he was just talking small talk, basically, "Oh, hey, what's up? I'm new. I'm coming. Let me read it to you." No, it's okay. You'll read it yourself. But basically, he made them think that he was coming in there, flying in. He was flown in to that company to do some security work. And he basically made them like him, and they pretty much walked up to the door. They scanned their card, and they pretty much just held the door open for him. So now he walks in. He goes to the front desk. He flirts with the front desk lady and names some names that of the people that work at that company, which was easily obtainable on the website, company website. So he got these people's names on the website, and he brought them up in his conversation. So now this person, this lady, this attractive lady that he's flirting with at the front desk thinks, "Oh, wow, this guy definitely is supposed to be here. I mean, after all, he's naming names that of people that work here." So she automatically assumes that he's legitimate and she trusts him. And she pretty much lets him in, gives him a pass, and is like, "Oh yeah, the office is over here." So he goes down, he has a cup of coffee, then he, so basically the story goes on, and he eventually makes it all the way down to the main computer room where all the servers are held. He gets the passwords and usernames from the main dude. He just gives it to him because he trusts him. And in the end, he has access to the whole company network. And he's not even supposed to be in there. Because human trust. Basically, no matter how many firewalls you have, no matter how many security things you have installed on your computer and your network, your company is basically vulnerable to human attacks. Because people just are trustworthy. So it's as safe as your safest person kind of thing. So it doesn't matter how much security you have installed, if the people that work there don't have the right mindset and are basically too trustworthy and assume good things of people, then you aren't safe of anything. So basically, this guy was able to get right into the company without any kind of identification, and right into the computer room. And this story is actually, I linked to it in the show notes, like I said, the PDF file. He just goes through all the conversations he had with the people. He shows pictures of the lady at the front desk, of him walking down the hallway. It's actually a really interesting story. Also, many of you have you heard of Kevin Mitnick? This guy, he went to jail for, hacking some of the biggest corporations in the United States, including like Microsoft, I think it was, some of the biggest phone companies. He was able to get their source code for their biggest products, and the majority of all of his hacks were simply via social engineering. That's why a lot of people they don't give him that much credit, because they're like, "Oh, that's not real hacking. He talked his way into it." Well, in the end, he got a lot of information, a lot of things, just by simply just talking to people and asking for it and tricking them into thinking he's someone else. And I read his book. It's called The Art of Deception. And I highly recommend picking it up. I'll leave a link in the show notes. But basically, he provides a lot of examples in the book about really great examples of social engineering attacks, against government agencies, like FBI, getting information from government officials about other people, basically having other people get information for him about other people. It's pretty amazing what you can do just by social engineering. And he explains it all in the book, so I highly recommend checking it out. It's called The Art of Deception, and you can get it for a couple bucks on Amazon. But that's pretty much what social engineering is. Let me see here if anything here I missed. So some things you can use to gather information about social engineering is you can look on company websites and get, phone numbers, you can get people's names, and use all this information in the process of social engineering someone, having them, proving to them that you're basically convincing them you're someone else and just convincing them to trust you and give up their information. You could do dumpster diving, lots of times people, companies just throw away a bunch of information, papers that have a lot of confidential information all in dumpsters. And that's called dumpster diving. People literally go inside dumpsters and pull out stacks of papers that have a bunch of confidential information, including like financial papers, passwords, all that good stuff. There's a thing called shoulder surfing, looking over someone's shoulder. That's considered social engineering. Well, there's a lot of stuff. But yeah, so now you know of another category of hacking, social engineering. Not that technical. It's basically depend how great you are depends on your people skills, how good you are with people, how convincing you are, how friendly you are. So that's social engineering. So once again, check out the links in the show notes for the story and check out the book. Also, if any of you have ever gone through and done a social engineering attack and were actually successful, I'd love to hear it, all your stories. So if you want to send them in to my email, comments@mrcracker.com, I'd love to read them on the show. This week's hacking website is offensivecomputing.net, and I'd like to thank Kurt for recommending it. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. But this website breaks down malware and looks at what it does to your computer and in general. But basically, it teaches reverse engineering, and you can actually upload your own malware if you come across some malware, and they might actually feature it on the blog and break it down, reverse engineer it. So if you're into malware and how it works, and into reverse engineering, check out the website. They actually have some great articles on it, and if you're interested, they have actually courses that you can take on reverse engineering. So once again, that is offensivecomputing.net. If you have any recommendations for any websites that have to do with hacking or security, go ahead and email me at comments@mrcracker.com. So last week in episode 14, I discussed malware and the differences between each type. Well, Bias9, he brought up a good point with a comment on the blog, and he wrote, "I wanted to point out that viruses don't necessarily have to be manually run by the user. Although relatively uncommon, drive-by downloads of viruses do occur, and this does not change a file's categorization as a virus. A better indicator or key behavior associated with a virus would be its ability to modify existing code or existing system files. A worm is generally considered a subcategory of a virus in that it often will modify code or inject itself into a legit process, but more appropriately by the methods in which it uses to spread itself." And for those of you who don't know what a drive-by download is, it's pretty much when you visit a web page on the internet and without your knowledge, it downloads a virus or some malicious code onto your computer. And this could happen via a vulnerability in a web browser or an email client or even your operating system. Also, many times it's installed by an ActiveX component or a Java applet, because many times when you visit a website and it requires you to allow that Java applet to run, you click yes, sometimes it's a fake kind of pop-up, or it's actually malicious and you allow it to run. Same with flash update pop-ups. Sometimes you have to update your flash, and by a little pop-up it says, update your flash, blah blah blah, click here to install. Many times those are fake and you actually install it and it's not really a flash update but a malicious program. So that's what a drive-by download is. So thanks for the comment. If any of you have any comments, questions, concerns, you can email me at comments@mrcracker.com, and I will read them and answer them on the show. That's pretty much it for this week's episode of the Cracker Cast podcast. If you wish to follow me on Twitter, you can get me at twitter.com/mrcracker. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or you can find the RSS link on the blog, mrcracker.com. That's it for this week. I'll see you in a couple weeks.